From Studio Live in the beautiful Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Howlett. Thanks for joining us again as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley and beyond.
Here we are, and we'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in once again to listen to our wonderful podcast about the Comox Valley and food in general and all the things that are happening in the world for us. You know what? We're getting very close to over 50,000 downloads of the Edible Valley podcast.
So. I know. I couldn't believe it. We're actually like just a couple hundred away now.
Yes. So it could be. So tonight we're going to sit down and talk about what's hot.
Yeah.
In the food world.
Sure. And before we get into it, I just wanted to throw a little shout out to our sponsors, the people that have supported us and allow us to continue to do this show and get to 50,000 downloads. Butcher's Block and Ivan's Truffles, and Atlas Cafe, here, Studio Live, Kirsten Wood Music, and even West Coast Provisions, who've been definitely helping us out a lot lately. What do you think about that, John? 50,000 downloads.
50,000 downloads. It's pretty exciting. Yeah. It's kind of it's been a long road to get to this point, yeah. And it's kind of exciting. And I kind of feel like we've just kind of started on this.
I know. This is episode what, 120 something?
We're about 126, I think. Or
yeah,
this will be 126. That sounds about right. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. And I can't believe that the two of us have just sat here and chatted that many times.
I know.
And we still haven't run out of things to talk about.
Oh my God, so. I still have so many things to talk about.
I know. And there's, you know, how many people we haven't met yet.
I know.
So, sort of segueing, because I'm looking at this chef survey that we're looking at.
Yeah, really.
Do you want to say a little bit more about it?
No. I'm just saying that that's really the impetus of this episode is this yearly survey that a lot of people aren't really privy to, but you are as being a participant, and I think it's great. The first time we did an episode on it, I didn't know really where we were going to go with it, but I've actually been looking forward to this. I like hearing all the feedback, and I like hearing all of the what chefs across Canada feel is going on in cuisine right now.
Yeah, and so that kind of gets me excited because I think a lot of things have stayed the same. A lot of things have changed.
Yeah.
I like to think that I pick a few of them.
Yeah.
But so I thought we would just go through the list.
Well, I mean, overall, was there anything really big and surprising about the whole report that comes out?
To me, no.
No.
Actually, I wasn't really surprised. I kind of saw it.
Yeah.
Saw it, and I feel that I'm those are the things I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And you know, it's taking the time going to the food shows every year and talking to the sort of those people. What's hot, I think you can always tell is what, not the mainstream restaurants, but you know, like the ones right. The cutting edge restaurants are already doing it.
Right.
And it's the big places sort of following along and realizing
yes.
that this is what's going on. And so,
right. It's, you get a lot of innovation in those small, sort of single operations, you know?
Yeah.
But then you get into the bigger franchises and they want to see something established for a few years before they're willing to jump on that trend
and that bandwagon.
Yeah.
And
so you generally see new and exciting stuff in those smaller one-off sort of restaurants or establishments.
Right, for sure. So, I don't know. You want to start with number 10 and work our way down, or you want to start from the top?
We can do whatever you want. Sure.
Okay, well, I was going to start off. Let's start at the bottom of the list here, and then we'll get to the number one thing, because the number one thing, it's hands down, I completely understand why this trend is hot right now and why everyone's following it. But to start off, there was Asian twist on condiments. And so I kind of was trying to think about that, and I kind of felt like that shared another one, but I guess we're looking for some those Asian influences.
I know that we talked about this early, really briefly. We didn't discuss anything, but we just sort of touched on these topics. To me, I would interpret that as being the Asian twist on condiments being kimchi, you know, things like the rising popularity of sriracha and other sort of like sambal oelek and your other, those chili-based.
The spices.
I know that I'm just touching on the surface there, but I think that's sort of the general idea.
Well, and that's it. And like sriracha has become like a staple now. And
yeah,
I use it in a lot of stuff.
So do I.
It's nice to add a bit of heat to something.
Yeah.
Not that I'm knocking. There's a wide range. Mm-hmm. Like sambal. Like, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I still like using Tabasco at times. So yeah. it's all there, you know? Yeah,
exactly. It's just another tool in the shed. It's not like, it doesn't replace everything.
Mm-hmm. And so it's incorporating those flavors into other flavors like sriracha and a mayonnaise or an aioli or something along those lines and then putting that on a sandwich. So yeah, I can definitely see how that one's coming along.
For sure.
The next one I was looking at, this one I was thinking was going to be a little bit bigger this year, mm-hmm. but pickling. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just because I've gotten into pickling this year.
I think that's one that's on the rise. I mean, that one wasn't even on last year's, and it's just at number 9 now. I think by the next couple of years, that'll sit at 5 or 4. I think pickling is definitely coming in.
Yeah.
It's something that everybody's realizing it's very easy to do. And it's like you can easily do it in your own home or in your own restaurant or whatever. It's not a lot of investment. And the preparation is you just do it, you put it aside, and it actually improves flavor as it goes.
Well, and sort of some of the thing too is pickling, you don't always have to have it as a preserving thing.
Right.
Like a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want a jar and can and all that stuff. Yeah. And I'm like, well, you can still pickle things. It won't have the same intensity, but some things are lighter, like pickled onions. I've been...
Absolutely.
And jalapenos and stuff like that. Just getting them in the vinegar and...
That's right.
Letting them marinate for a bit, you know, giving that extra flavor. So
I've had a business based on Japanese food and a couple of others. And I have quite a few books on Japanese cuisine, of course. And my son always gets a kick out of, there's a whole concept over there, but they have what they call a tabletop pickle pot. And it's, you pickle during the day to go with what you're going to have at dinner, right?
Yeah.
So you just have this pickle pot that sits on the table that you're pickling things to go with dinner.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but that's just it. Like that has nothing to do with the intent to preserve it. That's like pickling for the intent to use that day.
Just to get that flavor out of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I think that's a great one. Mm-hmm. Here was the next one that kind of got that was having a bit of conflict for with me.
Right.
Ethnic condiments.
Right.
And you kind of brought that one. You were like, well, that's, I guess, looking all around the world, those little sides that go along with everything. Like,
yeah.
Which I think, is a lot of Asian influence. I think like Indian and those longs.
Yeah.
As well as you were, South American dishes and some of the sides that come along with those things. And there's Africa and all those kind of little side flavors that go along that you're pairing things with just to add a little oomph.
Yeah. Like I said, I was thinking more ethnic condiments being more like your chimchurris are on the rise, like those, nobody knew what they were 5 years ago. And now a lot of places employ a good chimchurri.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
For sure. That's an excellent example. Moving along the list, and this is something that in the restaurant that I've moved towards, and I know a lot of restaurants in this area have moved towards, sustainable seafood.
Right.
And most of us go under the banner right now of OceanWise.
Right. Right. And OceanWise is sort of an accreditation is it mostly just the... this side, it's just the West Coast, or is that?
It takes into general everything.
Okay.
Mostly I think it's the Vancouver Aquarium runs mm-hmm. a lot of that. We just became a certified restaurant mm-hmm. with them. So we have the logo.
Right.
And we sell, and I definitely want to have in the future someone from OceanWise come down and chat with us as a podcast about sustainable foods, because I think our oceans are having some problems, and I think we've definitely overfished them. So I think a lot of people are looking at it now going, hey, wait, what are the fish that are out there that'll survive, and let's get rid of some of these bad seafood practices of dredging the bottom and stripping as much as we possibly can just to make a buck off it. So
exactly.
Trying to keep food a little bit more renewable. So and I kind of feel like that's a little bit of a food security thing that sort of...
No, I mean, absolutely. It's a responsibility that we have, don't just take everything and leave that sort of scorched earth behind. We take what we need, but we also make sure that it's there tomorrow too.
Yeah. And so I sort of felt like that's almost a bit of a theme of a lot of the stuff that came through this whole survey is just all that sustainable food security, you know, being responsible about what we're doing. Anyways, I'll leave it at that for there. Moving on, every chef's nightmare. The butt of every joke. No, but it's the next one. Yeah, gluten-free.
Yeah. I mean, they've tagged it along with being food allergy conscious. So it's not just strictly gluten-free, but yeah, it's definitely still a trend. It's definitely on the forefront of a lot of diners' minds.
Well, and you know, you think about it 5-10 years ago, I don't think anyone even knew what gluten was.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people still don't know what gluten is.
True. It's true. And I'm not, you know, pointing a finger at anybody, but there's a lot of people out there that say that they're allergic to gluten that don't even really know how to define gluten.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what? I definitely understand. I mean, people have issues digesting it, and it is difficult on the system. And so, you know, it's hard being a restaurateur and being in that situation because you want to provide for people and you want to have them with a good experience. So it's kind of nice in an aspect that it allows you to round your menu a little bit instead of focusing on just a bread-based
It's true.
Menu, you have to look at branching out into other atmospheres and definitely going, and I think it's a good thing, just going to more of a veggie base or a little higher protein base sort of food. So that was kind of an interesting one for me.
For sure.
Anyways, moving down the list, I definitely got to look at the old localvore or as in the whole locally sourced. And I definitely, I think that's our podcast.
Right.
So, and it's kind of one of those things, I think, as chefs are looking outside their window and trying to just figure out what's outside their window and what they can provide right there.
Right.
You know, and provide, we know now that the longer we ship something, the more we lose of that something.
Right.
So the closer we can get it, the fresher, the tastier it can be. And I think that's part of that whole locally sourced stuff is being able to have that really nice product that's right there.
Right.
Cutting down that footprint and making it just available to you. So
absolutely. It's all the contributing factors. It's the better flavor, the time from when it was harvested or picked or whatever to when it was consumed. And the fact that it doesn't have to travel. I mean, I can definitely see why that becomes a big trend or a focus. The next one we've talked about on here a couple of times, but not really in any great depth, but something that I've been looking to buy lately and haven't picked one out yet.
Yeah, I'm on the same one about that too. And I've kind of was on the fence in the beginning and I'm kind of realizing what it is, but sous vide.
Yeah, sous vide.
And a lot of people don't have a clue what that is. And it's kind of boil in the bag. No, it's
that's a sort of a really quick assessment of it. Sure.
It makes it sound horrible, but I mean, it's a really neat process of cooking at a controlled temperature.
Right.
And so you're cooking at a temperature that's not going to vary much, so you can you can get your meats to the right proper temperature. You can slow cook an item so that you can get the full value out of it. So, and it's just really neat to be able to do those kind of controlled things like cooking eggs to each one of their doneness, whether it's soft, hard, or medium by hitting that exact temperature. It's kind of neat with steaks and stuff that you could cook a perfect medium rare steak in the bag. You take it out of the bag, throw it on the grill, get your marks on the outside.
Give it that texture.
But it's already at that temperature.
Yeah.
And so you've got this perfect medium rare steak or you've got this perfect medium steak. So.
Yeah. I don't think people, it's one of the most affordable and reasonable ways to have perfect control over the temperature of your cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's why its popularity is coming in. I think people are realizing that they can, literally to a degree, control exactly what it's going to be.
And it's neat because if you're doing it in a sealed bag, which a lot of vacuum bagging and stuff like that is done, you can infuse flavors into products. So you can have your fresh herbs in this product.
Absolutely.
And they're slowly infused in so the oils don't, get into the meats, they get into your vegetables, you know, so you can actually get that wonderful taste out of it. So it's a very interesting process and I think it's done properly a lot of places and I think it's done improperly a lot of places, but I think it's definitely one of those new hot and trend And the fact is, you can do it in a bucket. Like, it's pretty simple. Yeah. Once you have the cooker, you can place it in anything. And it's kind of a neat way of cooking. So,
yeah. And bringing that back to Chef Aaron Rail, he's the first person in town that I remember or that I know of that's been employing it for a long time. He's been using that as a process for a good 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done it once way back. We had one for a bit.
Right.
One of my old cooks brought it in there. And yeah, it was quite a lot of trick. It was neat. It was a little difficult sometimes because you had to hit your portion rate. So you had to know you were going to sell how many portions. But yeah, it was kind of a neat process. So.
Yeah. And the next, I mean, it's funny, like all of these are all things I want to do, except for number one. But they're all things that are on my list of things I've been wanting to do these last few years.
Right.
New projects I want to take on. So the next one's charcuterie.
And we had a great little conversation there. We had Cohen in here.
Absolutely.
And Brian. And we got into the whole charcuterie because at that time I was like, this is where it's going. So it's kind of, I had that feeling. I knew that's where I was going. So it was
Yeah, it's great. I would love to see this continue to further develop. I mean, it's so many great things can be done in-house in these restaurants to, you know, just new takes on meats that can be done right there.
And yeah, a lot of those little things is that you don't need as much, you know, you can get these great flavors from just a small dish and it's fun to play with and you can mix flavors on a plate and people can sort of eat it as they want. So it's kind of neat. Curing meats is kind of, I think it's that new thing and it's a lot of chefs are kind of getting really keen about how do I preserve this piece of beautiful meat that I spent a lot of money on and how can I make it this much more exciting for my customers. So,
The next one is something that you've been doing for a while that I'm always quite proud to talk about what we do at our place to smoke. The next one obviously is smoking,
but let it out of the bag there.
But, no, I mean, we've always smoked, at the restaurant that we're at, we've always smoked our own salmon and cheeses and other products as warranted. But now that you've got that fantastic smoker, I mean, things have just sort of kicked into high
gear. Yeah, I know. And in some ways I only think it's a hot trend right now. And I think it may be at the end of it because, everyone's got a pulled pork sandwich now, you know, those kind of smoked dishes are everywhere, you know, like getting ribs and smoking chicken and all that stuff. It's still neat because it's not something you can do at home. And I think that's why it's a good trend out there. I'm just thinking of those pepperoni sticks that we got the other day from the Butcher's Block.
Yeah,
those you know, are so good. His smoking on that, you know, and those and that falls back into curing meats and all those things. So it's kind of that neat way of moving.
But
on
I love it when you guys sort of branch out. I mean, I know that at one point you were doing smoked onions and you were doing smoked. Think that's where you can employ that to do completely new flavors that people hadn't even really considered.
Well, and that's like we've been doing the dashi bowl at work.
Right.
Which is, we've been creating a vegetable dashi. And so to get that dashi flavor, we've been smoking the onions and really trying to pull that smoked flavor in there to give it a little bit more body and depth. So,
yeah. I mean, dashi is generally smoked tuna flake. But for you to keep it vegetarian and use smoked onion in place of smoked tuna flake, it's brilliant. And it's got great flavor. I love it. I think there's some great things there that you can do with smoking.
Yeah. And it's trying to find out what you can smoke and what you can't smoke. You know, like you can smoke an apple, but you can't smoke some fruits.
Yeah.
Watermelon doesn't work too well.
No.
You know, so yeah, it's definitely kind of neat to be in there and start working with the smoked stuff. And I think this gets us to number one, and I think most people will probably know what this is in there. And it's not as much food as beverage, but if anyone's gone out there nowadays, every town seems to have their own brewery. So, the real thing is craft beers are kind of the new thing, right? Well, not the new thing, but the hot thing, because they're everywhere. You know, grabbing a growler. Mm-hmm. We've got three breweries in town here now, if you start with... you got Cumberland Brewery.
Forbidden Brewery,
and then Gladstone. So everyone's producing some amazing beers and all a little bit different, yet still the same, you know, like, and definitely adding a bit of atmosphere. So it's neat to go down to, like, Cumberland, all three of them, and you just see a crowd of people and, you know, having a couple drinks and going in there with friends and meeting up there. And I don't see it going people overindulging. Like I see it being pretty respectful. Like people just coming in, having a couple pints, you know, and then living out, leaving it that, you know, like, it's kind of a nice event. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really happy that's finally come. I come from a family of beer brewers. My grandpa and my dad both worked for Labatt's for years. So, I'm really happy to see that it's, you know, small batch brewing is in.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been ever growing over the last 15 years, but that it's finally sort of embraced, I think that's great. There's a couple other things. I mean, I don't want to, we just touched the top 10 there. I thought, though, there's literally another 44 pages of information beyond that. But there seems to be a couple of things that we could just look at really quickly. A couple of things that have phased out, so to speak, from being in the top 10 from last year, really just what leafy greens aren't getting the same popularity or the same vote that they did in the previous years.
Yeah, that's true.
The need for organic produce or the want to see that organic label
on. I hate to say it because I don't think it's that people don't want organic. So I think that's not, I think it's that people are looking more for locally sourced.
Right.
And not worrying as much about the organic label.
I agree, yeah.
As in the locally sourced food. So I think that's a bit of a change. And I think it's because it also came, there's a lot of organic out there and there's a lot of questions on what is organic.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Speaking of which, you can check out our episode, What is Organic? But yeah.
You know, so there is some questions on that. And it becomes a little bit overwhelming when you start seeing these labels on things. And like, sort of like leafy greens, I almost think about it with like, who am I thinking? Oh, artisan greens.
Right.
You know, like artisan is something that is done in small batches and unique. But yet now you've got artisan breads coming out of these big bakeries and you've got artisan greens and you've got artisan this and artisan that. So it's kind of something that's kind of fallen to a bit of the side. So not that I'm knocking, I want to say organic's a bad thing because I think it's great to have organic food and properly raised and, you know, properly obtained food. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's lots of great things here. There's lots of, other little bits of information that I thought was pretty interesting. But by and large, the big top 10 list seems to be a good indicator of what's going on across Canada and food and what more or less, not even necessarily what's going on. They're categorizing it as trends, sort of being this is what everybody feels is happening.
Yeah.
It's about to happen or it's about to become big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'd love to hear from our listeners out there. If you want to send us an email, you can email us at theediblevalley@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear what you think about this list. And if there's something that you think is missing from there that's really popular right now, or if there's something that you think is going to be an up-and-comer, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And definitely don't forget to send us something on our Facebook page to the Edible Valley Podcast.
And and many thanks to our sponsors at the Butcher's Block in Courtney, to the Atlas Cafe, also downtown Courtney, Ivan's Truffles, and Kirsten Wood Music, and Studio Live here in Cumberland. And thanks for West Coast Provisions as well for all the continued support and helping us make this show. If you want to add your name to the list of sponsors or see it on our Facebook page or website or any of our posters around town and special events, just get in touch with us and we can discuss it from there. How do they get in touch with us, John?
The best way, check us out at theediblevalley.com. Check us out and send us an email at theediblevalley@gmail.com. And keep an eye out for us. We're working on a crowdfunding thing to sort of help support the podcast and keep the budget down on us a little bit and hopefully let us explore into a couple new avenues and sort of maybe broaden the podcast a little bit and bring some more people out here.
Great.
And if you have anyone out there that you would like to think would have some great information to tell us about the wonderful food industry in our community or just food in general, we'd love to hear about them and hear about their story. So thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.